Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Scheltema, my co-host for the Steve Sidnell Read, and our guest this week, Janet Kilo. Janet, what brings Thaddeus and his granddaughter to Toronto, and where do they find lodgings?
The previous book, Thaddeus was in London, Ontario, and his granddaughter Martha was with him, and she briefly gets kidnapped. Okay, and everything turns out happily, so that's fine. Martha's father hears about it. Now, Martha's father was absent for most of her childhood. He came back when she was like 8, 9 years old, right? So she has always considered Thaddeus her father. That's her father figure. And Francis has never been able to really take his place as a parent with Martha. But he hears about the kidnapping, and he is absolutely furious. And he writes a letter and demands that Thaddeus bring her right back home. And he is just beside himself at what has happened to his daughter. And so for the first time, he's asserting himself as her father. Martha's not impressed. She wants to hang out with Thaddeus because Thaddeus is fun, right? Like, fun stuff happens around Thaddeus, and she does not want to go back to Wellington. So they hatch this hasty plan, as she and her grandfather, that they need to come up with some scenario that's going to be acceptable to Francis, her father, that will allow her to stay with Thaddeus. So they decide that it would be a good idea if she attended the provincial normal school, if she went and got some more education. Thaddeus is on his way to Toronto anyway, so that's going to work out really well. They finally talk Francis into this, and he wants to know where they're staying, of course, and they're thinking rooms somewhere. So he writes to Thaddeus writes to his son Luke, who lives in Yorkville, and he stayed with Luke in one of the previous books. And Luke said, well, don't be silly. You don't need to stay at a boarding house. Just come and stay with us. And Francis is dubious because this is setting this whole thing up for, you know, another adventure. But finally he gives in. And so Thaddeus and Martha go off to Toronto.
And stay with Luke.
And they stay with Luke.
And she does indeed become a student at the Provincial Normal School.
She does.
So tell us a little bit about this institution.
Okay, so the term normal isn't the same definition that we kind of think of today. It referred to norms and standards. So a normal school was things were being taught to a particular standard. It was a really interesting experiment for the 1850s, which is essentially when it was established. It was started by Egerton Ryerson, and the idea was that it was to improve the general quality of education in the entire province. Because up until then, sometimes you had little village schools. Sometimes you had no school at all. The schoolmaster was whoever could manage to keep everything in order, you know, and whatever knowledge was imparted was just kind of by the by. And so he said, no, we have to have teachers who are trained in teaching and trained to a certain curriculum so that we have standardized education across the colony, because that is the only way that we're ever going to raise ourselves from sort of an agrarian society into something approximating, a civilized country. The truly astounding thing about the normal school is the fact that it was open for girls.
It is astounding in that time.
At that particular point in time, girls were not admitted to any university. The only way a girl could get a higher education would be if their family had enough money to send them off to a private school. Mm-hmm. Even then, a huge number of those private schools concentrated on what they called the ornamental courses. Right. And that was, you know, deportment and fine needlework and playing the piano. So you're popular at parties and stuff like that. So higher education for girls was a real problem. So there was that aspect of it. But for the first time, we're seeing an opportunity for females to be able to be trained in something that approximated a profession. Mm. You know, your employment opportunities were just so limited. You could be a domestic servant, you could be a field worker on a farm. If you had enough money to open a boarding house or something, you could do something. A huge number of females worked, but they worked in family businesses and for no pay and the whole 9 years. For the first time, this is allowing them to have an actual career.
That's cool. So we're talking secondary education, because Martha is not a little girl.
No.
For those who don't No, Martha.
No.
She's
at this point, she's 17, yeah. Which is essentially a woman in those days.
In those days, particularly, yeah. Now, you said that there's a larger story arc to Thaddeus Lewis' series, because we're up to book 7 at this point.
Yes, we are.
And over the series, he has aged, for those who are following Thaddeus. It's all becoming quite apparent. So, do you want to talk a bit more about the overarching arc?
When we first meet Thaddeus, Upper Canada is still a very agricultural community. It's a very backward little colony. There's not a lot of industry. People are mostly just farmers. The state of government is essentially a governorship. The governor comes from Britain, and what he says goes. So just at that time, they're starting to move towards what they called responsible government, which means that the government is responsible to the people. And it wasn't anything like how we vote and how things work today. But it was the beginnings of that. And so over the course of the series, you're starting to get a real sense of how Canada moved from this backward little colony, and they're kind of being aimed in the direction of becoming a country on their own. And you can start to see that happening through the first 7 books of this series, and that will continue. We also have more and more characters from the previous books who are being incorporated into the next books. Now, they still all stand alone as stories.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick up any one of them and have a good read. But there is this interlocking character grid going on here. And so it's kind of fun if you do happen to know what went on in the previous book. And then, of course, we have Thaddeus' story himself. When he starts out, I made him an ethical character rather than a religious character, but those ethics are evolving over time. He's beginning to understand that things aren't nearly as black and white as maybe he thought they were. There are a lot of personal issues for him to deal with. His wife died in the 3rd book. She'd been sick before that. He absolutely adored his wife, and he's been 6 years now dealing with the depression that he had following her death. He's establishing adult relationships with his children. And I mean, this was a man who was gone from the household most of the time because he was off riding the circus and didn't really have that much contact with his kids, his own kids, until he quit preaching. It was all left to his wife. And so there's this lovely kind of exploration of those relationships, which of course are changing over time. And by the time we get to The Untoward Assassin, which is the 7th book, we're at the point where his children are beginning to think that maybe he's a problem that needs to be solved. So he's dealing
Sounds
with
familiar.
That change as well. Well, yeah, and I think all families go through that. They get to the point where, you know, the parent who up until a certain point was the authority figure in the family, all of a sudden is having to be looked after. They're having to think about what's going to happen to them. They're going to have to start to think about who's responsible for what's happening with the parent. And so it's been kind of fun to deal with those themes in the course of the series as well.
And some of the side characters, like Martha, too, you know, we see her being involved more and more in her growth. I mean, now she's embarking on a career.
That's correct.
Well, perhaps you'd like to read us another piece from The Untoward Assassin.
This little piece is just when Thaddeus and Martha arrive back at Martha's father's place. And Francis runs a hotel in Wellington, and we've run across both Francis and the hotel before. But this is the reception they get, and Francis is steamed. Thaddeus held out his hand. "Good to see you again." Francis glared and ignored the outstretched hand. "Martha, could you please go over there and wait for your trunk while I have a word with your grandfather?" "All right," Martha said, and walked over to where the porter was wrestling with baggage. A gentleman in a tweed suit and the woman in the black bonnet were waiting as well, but they were standing a little further down the wharf, closer to Francis. Thaddeus had been prepared for a certain amount of unpleasantness, but he was taken aback by the lack of any sort of welcome. "I know you're provoked with me," he said to Francis in what he hoped was a diffident tone. "You're correct," Francis said. "I am. Very. I assumed that you'd keep her out of trouble. I suppose I should have known better. You're always falling through the ice or getting hit on the head or shot at or chased or some damn thing. But I had hoped that having Martha there would make you think twice about getting involved in things that don't concern you. His vehemence took Thaddeus by surprise. Francis was ordinarily mild-mannered, and he had never before heard such strong language from the man. Now was not the time to comment on it, but he was glad that Martha had been sent out of earshot. "I'm sorry," he said. "It was my fault entirely." "Yes, it was your fault. How could you let her get involved in a murder investigation?" "It wasn't so much a matter of let," Thaddeus pointed out. "It was more a matter of try to stop her." "You were supposed to be taking care of her. She could have been killed." Francis' voice was rising with each accusation, and from where he stood, Thaddeus could see that Martha had sidled over to stand beside the other two passengers. She was close enough that she could probably hear most of the conversation. He frowned at her, but she ignored him and stayed where she was. "Yes, you're right. I'm sorry," he mumbled. "I should never have let her help." He hoped that his apology would soon end this all too public discussion. But Francis wasn't done yet. "Not to mention allowing her to associate with a known criminal." "Which known criminal?" Thaddeus was genuinely puzzled. There'd been plenty of criminals to go around, but Martha hadn't really had much contact with any of them, except for the man who had kidnapped her, of course. Maybe Francis had a point. "I'm talking about Clementine Elliott. The woman is nothing but a huckster." Two of the Carters' heads shot up at this. Apparently Martha wasn't the only one who could hear the argument. And Clementine Elliott must still be a name that could set tongues wagging in Wellington. "Well, yes, but..." Thaddeus wanted to say that Clementine was an extremely charming huckster who had been very kind to Martha, but he knew that it would just aggravate Francis more, and Francis was aggravated enough as it was. "Martha doesn't listen to anything I have to say. She really only listens to you. But that means that you have an even greater responsibility to keep her out of harm's way, a responsibility that you seem to have completely disregarded. I honestly don't know what to say." He'd said quite a lot already, and there was little of it that Thaddeus could disagree with. It was a conversation that he'd already had with himself.
Oh, well. Well, many thanks, Janet.
Well, thank you very much.
We've been talking with Janet Kilo about her newest book in the Thaddeus Lewis series, The Untoward Assassin. So where can listeners buy the Thaddeus Lewis series?
Okay, right now it's at Books and Company. It's just out. So it's at Books and Company, and it's also available on Amazon.
Cool. And if you'd like to connect with Felicity and myself, please send your comments on the program or your queries or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to us at our website, wordonthehills.com, where all these shows are archived and available to listeners at any time. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week, Sunday at 1 p.m. right here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.